Right, you had your hand up during the... Yeah, you.
I hope it's not a trivial point, but I was just thinking, I could call it an advantage that women make their face up. And so what you see is not always what's there, because it's been accentuated, or I suppose you could say disguised. So, well, how do you read that? Because you're not seeing natural face, you're seeing a face which has been enhanced, for want of a better word.
Yeah, if I could.
No, what I'm saying is,
not just the face.
And when you put makeup on, right? It's not the actual face. It's a face that's been enhanced. You know, around the eyebrows here, rouge on. You know, a particular type of lipstick, red if they want some sort of sensory device.
Okay.
So there's lots of artifacts that a woman will apply. I mean, it used to be years ago men used to do it when they wore wigs, but. I mean, there are some men that put makeup on, but I would say most men don't.
But I think makeup doesn't change.
Well, let me tell you, the next morning, if there's no makeup on, it's very different.
Through the chair, please. Through the chair.
It's something different. I think it's going to be. It's more focused on the sake of the thing. It's not that much,
or
the
reason.
It depends how much is
applied. Hang on, I got my course to come back on this.
Did you want to make your point first? No? Okay. Well, I think with that point, yeah, and I sort of deliberately left it out because, you know, there's apparently, or the studies which tried to be scientific, you know, that they took their photos and their measurements on faces without makeup, and they often sort of excluded hair and hairstyle and things like that as well. And, you know, some of the earlier studies, they wouldn't have taken that into account because a lot of the early physiognomy studies probably, you know, mostly focused on men. And yeah, so I think, yeah, it's a slightly different issue. And, you know, obviously there's a whole other talk about, you know, makeup and society.
Well, true, but advertising makes a big difference. I mean, you see a woman with all her eye over the place, she's not smiling. Next minute, she's had this pond's cream on her face. Wow. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I say that's subject to other cultural influences, but it's slightly different from physiognomy.
All right.
Right, Simon.
Yeah, first of all, I think what this demonstrates is that people who call themselves scientists often aren't. You know? and a lot of what we call science isn't. And even a lot of what we have now, move on another 10 years and we'll say, you know what, all that was rubbish.
Yeah.
Science is a method, it's not a data. Now, the method behind the physiognomy, it seems, is the same as the doctrine of signatures. Here, you go around looking for plants that are going to help you in nature. Now, you know that there's some plants that, yeah, if you take them, they have beneficial effect. And you don't have to work out what those are. However, when you start applying bogus ways of looking at them, you say, oh, this plant's got a heart-shaped leaf, therefore it must be good for the heart, and so on. And, I mean, that was how ancient medicine, and that's how modern bunkers herbal medicine, by and large, is still done. You know, is sort of like, yeah, this plant looks like that. It's certainly how homeopathy is done.
not at all.
All right. That's a conversation for a later day. Yeah. Anyway, but the point is that it's just applying the same thing to human beings. You know, that same dumb approach is saying, you know, that person looks a bit like a bulldog, therefore they must behave like a bulldog, sort of thing. You know. But, yeah, I'm going to stop there.
Right, anyone else? Yes.
If you look at something about the relationship between the theatres, physical theatres, and the criminal records, and you were saying like well, we as socialists, we would look or we would pay more attention for what is the social and political factors, and not that much personality, these kind of things. I think there is, when we talk about personality, sometimes we don't think people in terms of thinking like, what is coming the personality from? The personality is just turning to genetic reasons, or is also environmental reasons. So if you go to the science, actually there is not evidences, like there aren't any evidence about how weight, it's like how much is personality and how much is the genes. It's like 50-50 what they say for now, or so they say put more important in the environment. So what I'm saying with this is I do believe in this sort of science. I don't think everything is right. I totally agree when you say that they can use it just to like emphasize the or give more weight to the racist evidence and this kind of thing. I totally agree, you have to be really careful and really aware about this kind of thing, but I do believe there is something true, because the personality, you think, when you see someone's face, you can see part of the personality, not because of the genes, not because this, his face or her face is like that, because he born with these genes or these other genes, but more because if you think in the kind of life he or she had, like she suffered a lot, she had a lot of stress, I really think that you can see, you have to be very careful and don't think you have the truth and you are God and you can judge people just because of the way they look. But I think you can actually see a lot of things because of the faith, because of the posture and all this kind of thing. But always thinking that maybe this is the moment of their life, so maybe they are on depression or there is a moment in their life, and a specific moment, no. You can't judge all their life, obviously.
I think on that one, I mean, that's why I mean, when I started sort of the preparation, I thought, oh, physiognomy is a complete load of rubbish, you know, it'll be completely disproved. But I tried to bring a bit of ambiguity into it, because I think the aspect of physiognomy where it says that over some time, your experiences and your emotions and your life in general is somehow reflected in your face, even if that's down to how comfortable you are with making eye contact or, I don't know, sort of posture, that type of thing is sort of does reflect our experiences to some extent. But that doesn't really make it a reliable science. It's more just a way that individuals have expressed their life through how they are now. So I think that there's a bit more justification for physiognomy in that respect. But I mean, and as Simon quite rightly says, a lot of the a lot of the more recent studies which seem scientific in 10, 20 years' time, I hope, expect that they might too be disproved when someone questions the methodology or questions the way it's done. So, I suppose, just quickly, I think it's tempting to believe there's something in physiognomy, but I still think that's down to more sort of cultural or influence or personal experiences.
So can I just ask something very quick? Is that when we talk about nonverbal communication or the posture and this kind of thing, it's included in physiognomy?
Not really, no, yeah. No. But I suppose in our everyday judgments, we do tend to group them all together.
Anyone who hasn't already spoken? Yes, at the back there.
Some of these, I mean, you mentioned the homosexual thing. There have been some really quite convincing statistical studies where they just, as I said, they try and leave out the way they dress, and people making judgments, and then they do a statistical analysis on the data, and then it's not just 49-51, they can do whether it's significant or not, whether you could have possibly got that result by chance. And, some of the data is quite convincing, but I think as she said over there, I think a lot of it's, now thinking about body language, basically, people portraying their personality through the facial expressions and picking up on that unconscious kind of thing. I mean, a lot of these mothers will say that they select their targets by the way they're walking. So I think you can determine people's personality by the physical appearance, but most of the time it's
Okay, Simon?
Yeah, I think another thing we're missing here is that we're not talking about stuff out in the world. We're talking about the products of consciousness. The way that we look at each other is that's a product of our consciousness operating. How we look at people. I mean, the fact that we isolate certain features of the face and the body and whatever, all of that is constructive. It's a language that we use to deal with ourselves. Our behaviours, what we read into people, is also another set of language about ourselves. And we just chuck all that together and we try and call it science when we play around with it a bit. But it is only the way that we're looking at ourselves. Yeah, so you're not actually finding... for example, that whole business about trying to find people who look a bit gay. You start off by saying, well, we manufacture in our society the notion of what is straight, what is gay, what are acceptable behaviours. I mean, one of the best graphs I ever saw for that, it had on the was on the y-axis, it had like 100% heterosexual. On the x-axis, 100% homosexual, and a huge circle in the middle saying a bit queer. Yeah. So when you start, you know, when people start trying to find, like, oh, someone looks a bit homosexual, and find out they are, they're not finding something that is. They're finding their own answer, if you sort of mean. It's that they're finding the thing that they set out to look for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because otherwise they wouldn't have found it. And so it's like, you know, it would be, say, part of our language that, say, someone who looks more rugged and perhaps heterosexual might also have more female attention, and thus would have, like, you know, asked themselves less questions about do I actually prefer men instead of women, etc. Yeah, so all of these things would entirely swamp, yeah, any kind of actual data about, you know, what we really are in the world of Sulnik. Yeah, our assumption would utterly swamp any kind of science. It's a game we play with ourselves.
Actually, I'd like to ask Simon this methodology of the X and Y and the big circle in the middle.
What with you?
I was asking where Kemp comes into it.
You start adding extra axes.
Yeah, but you could arguably, I mean, I'll say you could see someone that dresses Kemp in a Kemp way. Would you not agree with that?
You see, you could have missed what I'm saying.
Well, I tried to pay as much attention as I could, I promise you.
Right, well, I'll ditch private conversations for later. Well, I'm just going to put myself in because I took a couple of points and I'll come to Vincent. I seem to recall in Darwin's The Expression of Emotions in Humans and Animals, he makes a big point about that the expression of emotion is pretty much always related to physiological events, so that anger is associated very strongly with the raising of the heart rate and the flushing of the colour in the cheeks, and that the way that emotions are expressed. He mentions, I think, cats when they're angry they crouch low, dogs when they're angry they hack look as big, which is related to their fighting responses. And so there does seem to be some element of that there is a clear link between physical states and emotional states. I just thought a couple of points about the actual science of measuring faces these days, because we had this business recently with Richard III. They got hold of a skull that they found in the ground, and they were able to just basically reconstruct his face based on the measurements of the skull alone. And also these days we have facial recognition software. So aside from the old physiognomy that, you know, that tried to make these associations between, you know, animals and humans, we actually now have very, very precise methods of measuring them. But I'm saying, whenever I look at photos of myself, I just look, you know, almost invariably look like a murderer. And I've hardly killed anyone.
No, it's okay. I'll shut up.
Okay, Vincent.
It seems that throughout history of human beings, that they've always tried to make shortcuts in determining a person's personality. Their outward physical appearance, and probably that will continue indefinitely. If we come up to more recent times, where with the increasing technology, our general activities are the aim is generally to make things done as quickly and efficiently in the performing of tasks as possible, and that is certainly true in the modern world. And so, people are trying to assess others' personalities and traits, compatibility, maybe forming a relationship, maybe whether in a job interview, then it's inevitable that they're going to try these short-term methods of assessing, dubious in many cases, of assessing a person's character and personality. And, I think if we look at future socialist society, I'm not supposing for one moment that these methods are going to be completely abandoned, because that would be extremely naive. But I think that there are probably, with time and speeding things up, being as human beings being less of less importance, and far more humane type of society, with socialism are obviously being the one that we've got at the moment. I think there'll be that when people are assessing others for compatibility, for the relationship, or forming part of a group, or for working with different people on tasks, I think there'll be a less emphasis on using these shortcuts. So what I conclusion, what I'm saying is, I don't suppose for one moment that these shortcut methods are going to be eradicated. I think in future socialist society, they won't be required to the same degree as they are now and have been in the past.
Okay, anyone else? Yes.
I'm just wondering, is there anything to behavioural science at all, or is it a science that's been superseded and relegated to history? And is the data that's gathered showing increasingly that there's no such thing as human nature? I'm born like a blank slate.
I'm no expert, so I suppose it's only sort of a tentative answer. I don't know if anyone else could maybe give a bit more. Give a bit more detail, but of course, as science progresses, we can sort of measure in, you know, what goes on in the brain and you know the nervous system overall with more precise, in a more precise way than we ever could. I suppose it's what we do with that data. I think it's pretty much Simon's point. What we do with the data is the important thing, and that what we do with the data is sort of culturally determined in that we interpret certain data in certain ways according to our other prejudices or our other belief systems. Yeah, I suppose it's as a society, what do we do with the increasing amounts of data that we can gather about what goes on in the brain and how that's reflected across the whole of the body? But I'd say, I don't know if someone else maybe wants to give a more comprehensive reply to that than me.
Yeah, I'll take Richard before Simon.
Okay, yeah. I think the general drift of scientific research at the moment is showing that we're definitely not a blank slate, that we are born we come with certain functions, but how those functions manifest themselves is now becoming very, the method by which those functions manifest themselves is now becoming very, very complex with the discovery of things like epigenetics, which shows that you cannot distinguish between nature and nurture. These two things are just not separate. We now know, for example, that genes don't simply determine anything. Genes can be switched on and off, and they're switched on and off by, for example, the state of the intercellular fluid in which they actually exist. And that can be influenced by extracellular chemical activity, which can be influenced by our environment. So, in fact, our environment can determine which genes are switched on and off, and therefore what responses what behaviour or physiology they result in. So it's very complex now, but certainly we're not born as a blank slate. I mean, the example that I often give, because it's very simple and kind of very clear example, is that as a motorcyclist, one thing that all motorcyclists have to learn very early on is about target fixation. If you're going into a corner, that there is a tendency for all human beings, once they see a threat, to fixate on it visually. And if you do that on a motorcycle, then you're just going to go straight into whatever you're looking at, whatever you're fixated on. So the very first thing that a motorcyclist has to learn is not to target fixate, which is universal. It's what we all do. So there are certain things and features about us that are actually important. But you can overcome them. You can learn socially. And most motorcyclists do learn that socially. Somebody tells them. If they didn't, if they had to learn from themselves, they'd probably not survive long enough to actually learn that. So there is this kind of social learning going on there. Just briefly you focus mainly on Western tradition, that there are other traditions of you might broadly call them physiognomy, and particularly in terms of medical physiognomy. The Chinese have a kind of extremely long tradition of this. It's generally put under the kind of heading of traditional Chinese medicine, but in fact there is no such thing as traditional Chinese medicine. It was actually invented during the Maoist era. It was kind of taken together lots of strands of very different kind of Chinese traditions. And all the mystical stuff, you know, all the stuff about putting a hangman's noose under your pillow at night to cure headaches and stuff like that, that was all chucked out. And sort of being a kind of pseudo-Marxist kind of approach, they accepted all the stuff that could be seen as material. And facial diagnosis was very, very much, and I think still is very, very common in China. So, for example, different parts of the face are associated with different organs. And because in traditional Chinese medicine, different organs are associated with different psychological states or different sort of personality traits, by extension, you can theoretically, in that system, read that off. There's another quite interesting method that has been used in the West up until the 1960s in hospitals, and that was iris diagnosis, iridology. That was only thrown out of hospitals, as I say, in the 60s. You have a look at the shape, colour, arrangement of the fibres in the iris, and you can diagnose from that. It was only choked out in hospitals, interestingly, because at the behest of the pharmaceutical companies, who thought that this was a cheap and cheerful way of actually making a diagnosis, and you know, sort of their preferred ways, which would lead on to the use of pharmaceuticals, was actually much more effective. So nobody's ever really tested that out to see if there's any kind of. One of the interesting things about that is that irises do change. So the basic structure doesn't change, but the details change. So there is an argument that is made by people who are kind of proponents, or I'm not saying I'm proposing it, but this shows that so you can identify basic character, and you can also kind of diagnose certain traits from it as well. So there are all kinds of methods and techniques sort of throughout history that have been used. So what strikes me as really kind of interesting about that is that we do have a natural ability to kind of read kind of faces as part of our evolutionary mindset, and there is also this tendency to try and kind of systematize that. And I think that for me, my guess is that that's really what's going on, where sort of you can't actually be certain about what's going on in somebody's mind, but you can make a very good guess because you're very good at reading. We're designed to be very good at reading faces, and we're just trying to be rather more certain about it because we like to be certain about it. Just an observation.
Yeah, just quickly. Yeah, I probably should have sort of looked at sort of beyond Western tradition and sort of widened it out that way. And I suppose, yeah, again, that would have shown that sort of physiognomy has had an influence over an even wider geographical area. And I suppose, acupuncture, that's or auricular acupuncture, that's a sort of similar thing to iridology, is it? In that sort of certain points are associated with certain internal organs or certain conditions.
There's a diagnostic form of acupuncture where if you press there, the person goes out and says, "Oh yes, you've got kidney problems." The Chinese have a vast range of physical therapies, that diagnostic techniques that develop like this. You find them in certain African communities as well.
I suppose that's sort of another way that how we interpret the inner by the outer, isn't it? I suppose it's another one that's obviously physiognomy's part of that. But again, I'm sort of tempted by the study that I mentioned in the bulk of my talk, that when we do that, and maybe it's best not to sort of, I don't know how much that can be applied to things like iridology or auricular acupuncture, that we're misinterpreting or making an overgeneralization rather from an emotion in someone's face and reading more into that than we should do. I think that's probably where I'd be tempted to think. But yeah, some good points. I should have thought of them myself.
Simon.
Yeah, one other thing here to remember is that when people want something to be true, but they want the reasoning to be more than, I just came up with that in my head. They come up with a science-y method. Yeah. So, for example, Gillian McKee has to do a whole series of programs on Channel 4, and she is a nutritionist, i.e. she knows nothing about actual dietitians at all. Okay, anyone can call herself a nutritionist. But she wants to go on this program, she wants to humiliate someone for being overweight. So what she does, she doesn't just sit there and say, you know what, I think you're a bit of a ball fan. What she does is she says, right, I'm going to sniff your poo. Yeah? I've sniffed your poo and you're overweight. Yeah? So, but that is doing something that looks a bit sciencey. Yeah? That is actually probably more scientific than phrenology or all this other business. Yeah? So what you're doing is you're actually trying, you've already got the answer that you want. You want to find, you start off thinking, you know what, there's something, I can read something about what people are by looking at them. And then you go away and you say, what is the method? Yeah, which is absolutely the opposite of what science is meant to be. Science, like, you can't have a method without knowing what your results are going to be and then reply. Yeah? So you've already got something where people are taking the way that they normally, the way they normally have prejudices about people and they're reverse engineering an actor for it. At the end of that also, you need to consider that we are finite creatures, yeah? That we are not very good at analysing, yeah? And the sum total of our analysis is only what we actually know. Now, one of the ways that we tend to judge whether something is wise or not is we will use our judgment. We won't use mathematics. We'll say, oh, that result's come out, and that feels right. That feeling right is absolutely no use as a measure whatsoever, and that determines the extent of your ignorance, if you like. You hit the point that you have become uncritical. So if something feels right, yeah, if something, yeah, you know what, that seems to make a bit of sense. If you don't have the data to it, saying it seems to make a bit of sense, you know, stands to reason, etc., that is not a positive outcome. That does not mean that you've got anything at all to your theory. What it means is that you've just stopped asking questions, yeah? And that happens with a lot of people when they come up with something that, you know what, that feels right, it seems to make scientific sense. They don't mean it makes scientific sense at all, because scientific sense is apply the method and see what the results are. What they mean is that feels sciencey, that feels good, because the sciencey method, yeah, is the way that I determine whether I can stop thinking. And that seems sciencey, seems to be the result I want, thank you, I can go to sleep. And I think that systems like this are basically like that. They're like the populace, like mind, body and spirit nonsense.
Yes.
Yeah, trying to respond to Darrell's initial question about are we born with a blank sheet? Of course, you know, having been a social worker and always being very much on the nurture side of the nature and nurture discussion, I suppose it has been, I find it a little depressing about the genetic predisposition towards certain characteristics in behaviour. You know, I sort of see it myself. Now, the older I get, the more I resemble my father. And things like, but scientifically, the adoption studies have been quite illuminating on that, really, where you have two schizophrenic parent, or just one schizophrenic parent, children are adopted at a very early age. The likelihood of that child developing serious psychiatric illnesses is very high indeed, 70% and above, you know. And of course, you know, it's been a big issue in social work because, of course, adoptive parents feel guilty about that. But of course, it's the genetic predisposition that can lead a child in that area. So I think one would have to say that the gene pool is quite strong, stronger than we thought in the 60s and 70s, you know, when I started off with this, which it's not to say one doesn't do anything about it, one doesn't support and find ways about helping people in that situation, but it is quite, you know, the studies have been very thorough and, you know, rather depressing, really, I find, to be honest.
Okay, anyone else? Yes, Robert.
Do you think there's such a thing as a socialist physiognomy? To people who become socialists and undergo any kind of physiognomic changes. I know that since I joined the SPG, we have become a little bit fatter, a little bit lazier. But more importantly, I scratch my head a lot more, so I'm wondering whether my brain's trying to escape my skull or the skull's reshaping. But it might be an easier method for recruitment. We don't have to bother trying to tell people about politics and economics. We can just say, give us your head, put your hand on it, and you're in.
Look for a furrowed brow or worry lines or something, yeah, about, is, yeah, thinking too much.
Right, anyone else new? Okay, I think this will probably be the last. Then, Simon, one last shot.
Just wanted to mention that genetics is going to be the next physiognomy, quite possibly. Now, bear in mind that medicine, I've been reading that, I think it's Bad Science by Ben Goldacre. He talks about the heroic age of medicine, where doctors basically did more harm than good. Yeah? And coming up with all sorts of daft ideas. Leeches, very occasionally, might work, but by and large, all of the cures that they're applying, you're trying to kill the patient. Yeah? You were better off just drinking lots of water and staying as far away from the doctor as you could. Genetics is pretty much in that situation now, because what genetics is doing is, you know what I was saying before about finding something that sounds sciencey? Well, genetics sounds sciencey, and it is the new way of basically justifying the thing you first thought of. Yeah? You want to show that basically to create a protective characteristic, for example, of the gay versus straight or whatever, you want to create a protective characteristic, you need to show it's not cultural, you need to show it's genetic. So what do? You use your latest thing that seems to make enough sense to let you go to sleep, said, which is like the genetic argument now, and use that to say, well, you know, there must be gay people and sort of like straight people and whatever, instead of saying, well, you know what, it's whatever people decide to get up to, you know? But the whole this whole notion, certainly when genetics is applied to behaviour, is, I think, something that I would have liked you to come up with at the end of the talk, is to say that, you know, the whole physiognomy idea of applying characteristics, so like, you know, personal characteristics, so physicality, yeah, is disproven and was shown actually to be people's expression of prejudices. I think that as we move out of the heroic age of genetics towards a more sensible one where we start looking at, well, what is the actual data, I think we'll find that most of these things fall along the wayside, that it was just one more way to justify prejudices. Because if you say it's physiognomy now, people say, oh, you know, that doesn't make any sense. But if you write in the Sun that, oh, genetics have proven that they're X, people will say, oh, scientists say, must be fine, I can go back to sleep. That sort of thing, I think, next 20, 30 years, that's going to go by a board of muscle.
If it's very quick, then.
I think it's when you were talking about all this, we forget something like even animals, we are animals, but like I mean, the rest of the animals, they always pay attention to the physical characteristics in order to find the right male or the right female. So it's not just about science. It's not. I think sometimes we think that, oh, we are human beings, and I'm sure we here we are all aware that we are not superior to the rest of the animals, blah, blah, blah. But sometimes unconsciously we still think that because we have the science and we think we are so different, but animals, they actually do exactly the same. When they are looking for a female, there is something very funny I love about animals, for example, it's very typical in dogs. We as human beings, when we meet each other, we start like giving two kisses, one hug, or maybe the other hand in England, or dogs. Dogs are more intelligent. They start smelling the ass of the other dog. This way they can know if they got any ill, if they are healthy, if they are eating properly, about the diet, blah, blah, blah. So they do, it's not, okay, I'm not talking about physiognomy, but it's related. So that's why I'm pretty sure that it's, even if science still has, doesn't know too much about how to get to it and how to prove it. And I'm not saying everything that is written is true. I'm not saying this at all. Probably maybe 10%, 20% is true, and the rest is just bullshit, and people with prejudice just trying to confirm their own beliefs. But I do believe the same animals they do, and in nature everything works like this. We can't do it, and we have the instinct, even when science is still not on.
Okay, right. Well, I think everyone's had a good turn at this. So if I ask Mike to wind up and possibly try and say physiognomonomonomonomonics one more time.
I should get it right at least once, shouldn't I? Physiognomonics.
Hey,
there you go.
Yeah. Right. Right. Sounds like an Asterix character.
once one off. Thank you very much for the interesting discussion. I'm glad it's gone off in sort of lots of different directions about you know the overall value of science and you know to what extent can we sort of trust genetics or to what extent can we you know. Whereabouts the nature nurture debate might go in the future. So yeah, I'm glad that the discussion sort of broadened out into a sort of a wider discussion, if you like, about science and society and how science is used to make judgments about us as people. I mean, with you know, Simon's made a lot of points about physiognomy and other sort of similar comparable approaches, sort of sounding scientific, and I think that. That certainly applies to physiognomy more so in the past, but I think the danger is that a lot of studies what recent studies which have reached conclusions compatible with physiognomy. It's a bit more than sounding sciencey because they use other scientific methods which are sort of otherwise accepted and which is sort of the best that we have to go on. So I suppose that maybe reinforces my point that because physiognomy has changed over the centuries and it's reflected different ideologies at different times and it's manifested itself in different ways according to different cultural influences, that it's also to some extent kept up with science, and it probably will continue to do that for a bit longer, again in different guises. So I suppose that was my main point, really, is that physiognomy it's got lots of ugly aspects to it in that it can be used to justify racism, xenophobia and other types of prejudice, but it's still sort of a part of society, even if it's mostly lurking in the background and it's subject to other influences. So yeah, I mean, I suppose that's why the talk was subtitled "The Pseudoscience That Won't Go Away," in that we as a society haven't quite outgrown it, and I'd like to think we would, but I think the jury's still out. Yeah. Thank you.